So, what is your name?
My name is Jerome Berryman.
Where do you live?
438 West 6th Street here in Ashland.
How old are you?
40 years old.
Good. What's your occupation?
I'm a store owner here in Ashland, Bison Mercantile. Retail, appliances, television, bedroom stuff.
Okay. When did you first become aware of the fire that's known as the Starbuck Fire that began on March 6th?
Well, I had my radio at work, as at work by myself that day, and knew it was bad conditions. The previous week, there was a yard fire because somebody mowed their yard, so we knew conditions were bad out there, and the wind was already blowing. And one of the first things I did is I opened up the store, and then I printed off signs that said, "Closed due to fire." Started hearing some chatter probably around 11:30 or so. Inglewood had been called out and was kind of listening in on that when I wasn't with customers.
And how'd that make you feel that you, as a volunteer firefighter, that you have to run your business and they're needing firefighters?
Oh, it tore me up. I've been on the department long enough to hear the inflections and the voices of everyone and know who's talking and kind of how it's going. And it didn't take long to realize that this was going to be a mess, that it was already a mess even just 15 minutes after the call went out. But there I was with customers, and I can't kick them out. When they sound the whistle for Ashland to go out, I was in the back selling a mattress and frame to a couple whose daughter was moving back that Saturday, and they were all excited about that, and the tone went off when I was talking to them, and I muttered something like, "Oh boy," and the gentleman there that was shopping with his wife mentioned, like, "Wow, is everybody in Ashland a firefighter?" It's like, "I think we're going to be today," and yeah, sure enough, but hearing everybody go out and me not being able to go out and help was pretty rough.
So did you evacuate when they gave the evacuation?
Yes, we did.
Did you close your store?
Yeah. In fact, about 2:30, I started shutting stuff down. I was watching the fire on radar because the plume was showing up on radar and listening to it on the radio. Those customers I was just talking to, as soon as they left, and there's another customer, and they left, snarfed down some food as fast as I could and just kind of started getting ready. You know, hydrate. It was a particularly warm day, and it makes you thirsty anyways, no matter what the weather is. But with as hot and windy as it was, just started getting ready. I said I started closing down about 2:30, and was actually getting up to go lock the doors when my wife called me and said they were evacuating the schools, sending people home. So between that phone call and picking my daughter up, I was there in 5 minutes. So there's a whole process to close it down. You got to take the bedding out and this and that. So fortunately, I'd started on that before I got that phone call and was able to go and pick my daughter up from school. And she came out. She was bawling. It was so thick and smoky in town already. I got a pretty good view from my front window and would go outside and kind of peek at what was coming every once in a while, and coordinating that with the radar and the radio chatter. And, you know, I had a bad feeling that I had a good idea of what was going on. So took my daughter home, and we have an emergency bug-out bag. One of the things that we do is we practice emergencies at home. And I've always been telling my wife, it's like, our biggest thing is not tornadoes or floods or anything like that. Our number one problem is out of control grass fire. And that's so tough to plan for because it can come from anywhere and go any direction. Fortunately, we had somewhat of a plan and a bag ready to go with medicines and deodorant and, you know, all the stuff that somebody's going to need for a couple days. We just drop everything and leave. So took my daughter home. and told her to get that bag ready and get a couple changes of clothes and head to her sister's, or at least Coldwater. At first I said, you know, go to Coldwater, go to Dave's Pizza, get a spot and see if you can make it to your sister's. Now, while we were getting that stuff ready, I went and filled up both vehicles with gas, which was frustrating in itself because the weather was so bad that the credit card machine wasn't connecting. So, you know, there I am with almost no gas in the car. Probably a mistake, but that's how it was. And finally got gas in the car, got back home, and told my wife to take the family and just head east and try to get to her sister's in Halstead. And,
so you know what time she left? You have a good idea?
3:30-ish.
Were they already evacuating Ashland by the time they left?
People were already heading out of town. I seem to remember her saying that when she got there, there were already people there at Dave's trying to figure out what they're going to do. That was pretty tough. Sending them out and then proceeded to help evacuate the hospital and do what I could around town.
So what did you do to protect your property, like your store and your home, if the fire came to town? Did you just lock the door and go?
Well, yeah, pretty much. There wasn't much I could do about the store except, you know, shut the doors and lock them. As far as the house goes, you know, it was wintertime, so we didn't have any hoses connecting or anything like that. It's just, you know, the weather was exceptional. At one point in the evening, when there was a, not that there was a lull, but when I had a chance, I tried to get a sprinkler going in the side yard, but it wouldn't have done anything. It just, like, slowed it down for half a second. There's not much I could have done to protect my property. So I just kind of left it at the will and did what I could to keep it from getting into town.
So you mentioned helping to evacuate the hospital. Mm-hmm. Did you help get patients into buses, or just what type of stuff did you do?
Yes, the first thing I did was go over to the emergency room and help them evacuate. They were loading up a bus of patients. They were putting together a convoy to head south to Buffalo. So I helped get them loaded. I went over to long-term care and made sure that they were had everybody evacuated and everything they needed, and waited for them to start their convoy south, and then from there drove around town. And well, I was going back to the store at first, and I was driving by a house near the store, and the ambulance was there and the front door was open, so I stopped, went in, made sure that you know, we didn't need any help, everything was going fine, we said everything's fine, we're moving on. And from there I just kind of went around town, and whenever I saw people loading up their cars or there was a car in the driveway, you know, I'd pull up and make sure that they didn't have a dead battery or flat tire or something like that, or if they needed some help loading, just trying to get people out of town. At that point, it was still a good idea. But as that progressed, I started hearing more chatter that Comanche County was having their problems. And like, oh my gosh, you know, I just sent my family that way, I'm sending these people that way. Was that a good call or not? I didn't know at the time. That was pretty rough emotionally.
So what about time? What about, was it like 4:30 or 5 by then, or was it earlier?
It was kind of on 4 o'clock that I started hearing about Comanche County having their problems. I know it was really hazy. I was hoping that my wife had got past that problem before, you know, they started talking about evacuating protection and shutting down that road. It was close enough. Finally got a phone call from my wife and said she was stuck in Coldwater because Pratt was having problems. And Pratt is right on the route that she would have taken to get to her sister's. So it was at that point that I knew she was stranded in Coldwater. And bad things were going on. I
feel helpless?
Yeah, I still kind of wrestle with that decision. It was the right move at the time, but over the next hour, the situation of found the handbasket floating down the water, so to speak, and there I am here, and they're stuck there, and there's nothing I can do about it. Even if I wanted to, the roads were impassable.
So the fire from the north had already gotten close enough to be causing problems?
Yes, it had. At one point, since I wasn't out putting out fire, what I was doing is driving around the perimeter of town whenever the wind shifted, and it kept shifting, and would drive into the wind, just kind of scout out and see what was going on. And it was at one point that we had another wind shift that went up on Tower Hill and got about 2 or 3 miles north of there and started seeing major fire sign directly upwind of Ashland. Fire tornadoes and stuff like that leaping over the back end of the cliffs over there. And it was at the point I knew we were going to have some trouble.
So when did you go to the firehouse? Or did you ever?
I went to the firehouse when I finished my initial evacuation routes. Probably about 4:30 or 5, just to kind of check in and see what was going on. I was trying to be at the firehouse whenever the trucks were coming in case somebody needed to take a breather, so I could, you know, make sure people had water. I knew people were thirsty. I knew people were hungry. And I just tried to coordinate us logistically there at the firehouse. When people came in, they could stop, get, and go.
Were there lots of people other than firemen at the firehouse at that time?
Yes, there were, and that was a little bit of a concern of mine, including children. For whatever reason, and they had good reasons, but they were there at the firehouse, and I kind of, you know, put that on my to-do list, is to make sure that they were going to be okay. One of the things I did at one point was go back to the store, cleaned off the shelves of MREs, grabbed a whole bunch of snack candy bars, stuff like that, easy-to-eat food, and took that back and had that available. At one point, it was sounding pretty bad, and said the radio was going, the kids were starting to get a little anxious, as everybody was, but, you know, I didn't want the panic to kick in. So I went back to the store and got a bunch of coloring books and crayons and, you know, stuff for kids to do, and got them set up so they could, you know, they're still there and they're still listening, but they had something to kind of focus on rather than listening to the radio. And as I said, the radio was sounding pretty desperate sometimes.
So when you talk about kids, how many, what ages?
Oh, gosh, there were...
All ages?
At least 5. The youngest was, he's really young. And the older ones, maybe 12, 13.
So where'd you set them up at with the coloring books?
Oh, at our meeting table. Yeah, where we usually conduct our meetings, the tables were out, so I kind of put that out there and said, hey, I brought this stuff. And I started thinking about it. I was like, you know, maybe the adults need something to do too. So the next time I was down at the store, I grabbed some playing cards and stuff like that and brought back some more snacks. Just doing what I could to keep us in the fight. And then, you know, as aid started coming in, I remember Brad and Heather stopping by with a whole bunch of water, which was great because I was kind of starting to scratch my head about that. So when stuff like that would show up, I'd get it in a good spot so it wasn't in the way, but still handy. Make sure that as more stuff came in, if it came in, but as more stuff came in, you know, it was arranged in a certain way where nothing was in, you know, path of travel and easy to get to, and
What about food? Did you get lots of food start coming in?
The first good amount of food I saw come in was early Tuesday. Somebody managed to stop by McDonald's and bring a bunch of breakfast burritos, and that was our first real meal. We had snacks and stuff coming in, and we were trying to get them to the firefighters as they were coming through and filling up with water, getting foam, whatever they needed to do. The kids were running out there and throwing water and Snicker bars and stuff like that to the trucks. And one of the other things I ended up needing to do is making sure they weren't running out in front of the fire trucks as they were peeling around, because everybody was, we should have been sponsored by Visine. Everybody's eyes were so shot, and everybody was tired. Practically nobody had lunch, so I just wanted to make sure the kids didn't run in front of a truck and have more problems.
So mainly on Monday till Tuesday morning, you were at the firehouse making sure that everybody had water and something to eat, and kids were out of harm's way, and everybody knew what was going on, and kind of keeping track of what was happening at that time?
Yes, trying to set up a headquarters of sorts. You know, I was trying to keep track of the weather as best I could. Whenever the boys would come in and Visine and take a breather, I try to give them a weather report, and always kind of ended with, but this hasn't been right all day long. So I'm going to talk about that fire out of the north and how it was coming down. Of course, it was getting as smoky as all get out where we're at, since we're on the northwest end of town. All that smoke was blowing right into us. I got a firefighter-rated particle masks for the kids because they were kind of starting to cough a little bit, and trying to figure out what would be a last-ditch stand if the fire did get into town. We were going to be right on the point of it, and what to do there. The city truck I had available, but it was just me.
And that's the only truck that's in the barn, right?
Yes.
Everybody else is gone?
Everybody else is gone. But what the city truck does have are air packs. And we have a bunch of spare equipment. And the idea was to get everybody into the middle of the barn and cover up as best we could with the spare equipment and put SCUBA, the SCBA air packs, onto the children and just wait it out.
So when people were coming in on the fire trucks, when they were coming in and you know, refilling with water and getting something to drink, what kind of thing reports were they giving to you? So you said you were giving them like a weather report. What kind of things were they telling you?
They said nothing and said everything with just how they were behaving, how they were looking at each other, trying to figure things out. Except I've been around them for a long time. And I could just tell from the body language that they're giving it all they could, but taking quite a bit in return. Like I said, I've been on the radio. I kind of had an idea of what was going on, but the radio traffic was so confused that there was actually a farmer there with a water tender trying to get that water out to us so he could help out. And he asked me, he's like, where do we go? It's like, I don't know where anyone is right now. Apparently, during that time, they got overrun and got scattered, and were trying to make their way back. And it was after that where I think they were trying to rally at the firehouse, get everybody back together so we could get the right amount of force to where it needed to go. And everybody was just really kind of, I don't think they were whooped at all, but tired, just, but ready to go back out. Morale was very, very high, even though, you know, some of the firefighters had just lost everything, and a lot of other firefighters didn't know if they were going to or not. But they're still on the line, and they're still willing to go back out. I was there on the bench ready to jump in if anybody wanted out, and I asked around, and they just kind of looked at me like, are you kidding me? You know, Visine, water, Snicker bar, let's go.
So did you get on a truck on Tuesday?
Tuesday I did.
And which truck?
52.
And who was with you on that truck?
J.D. Ridger.
And where did you go?
Well, they just kind of come back, and we're trying to figure out where to go. And 52 and their crew was like, okay, it's time, which is fine. I mean, that's, at this point, it would have been over 24 hours on the line. This was early afternoon on Tuesday, and we were sent out to work on a tree row fire. And during the switch out, JD and I kind of got left behind. They were ready to go. We weren't. I had to gather my stuff. We had to get in. You know, rock, paper, scissors on who's driving or, you know, whatever, just trying to figure that out. And we pull out about, 2 minutes after the convoy left. So we were kind of a Taylor and Charlie, and we were pulling up to the highway. And I'm in the passenger seat. I'm a Mouselman. JD's driving. And I kind of do his emergency vehicles, and people from out of town are coming through, and everybody's in a hurry, and everything's an emergency. So I just kind of do my usual, you know, check left, check right, check left, check right again. And look down east. Well, as we were pulling up, JD's like, you know, maybe we got to kind of check some things out, make sure something doesn't start behind us. He's just kind of talking. Since we're so far behind, and we're in 52, which carries hardly any water for what we were dealing with, it's like, okay, you know, we ought to stay with the group or at least check out. You know, we're just kind of talking about this. And I peek east, and I see a puff of smoke, which was odd. It looked odd. So I was like, you know what, JD, let's drive east and see what was going on. And what had happened is a fire had started here in town on an abandoned property. And we pulled up just as this thing was getting started. It's a minor miracle to even see that little puff of smoke. Like I said, it just got started, and it's windy enough that smoke doesn't hang around. But it's like, you know, let's go check this out. And we no sooner got that called in and pulled up, started putting water on it, that trees just started going up.
So who came to help you with that?
We called it in. We called in hey, we need everybody. Ashland came back. We got turned around and came back. And then we had some trucks from another department. I didn't get a good look at it. But V came up and helped out. But we got that fire stopped right as it was coming up on these other occupied houses. And it was rough because, you know, we came back. We think, okay, everything's fine. So now they're scrambling and driving on the road. And we're like, you know, we just need a path. We need to get up there and do this. And we went through our tank of water. And by the time I got done with that tank, Ashland had shown back up. And this other help had shown back up. And literally got this fire stopped on the doorsteps of these two houses.
So when did the strike team start showing up? The people that came from, like, Colorado or Nebraska or Cali County, or
the first help, major help that I saw. I said I wasn't out there, and apparently departments were showing up as they could, but everybody had troubles that day, so they basically show up, spray water, out of water, go back home. It's what I understand. Like I said, I wasn't there, but it was about 4 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday. I'd gone out and was keeping an eye on the trash dump, because the fire had come through there earlier, and the way the wind was blowing at that moment, it would have blown it into feed and seed and the airfield. So I kind of went down there, I was keeping an eye on that again, and looked off in the distance and saw flashing emergency lights, which is not unusual at this point in the evening. But then this one flashing light turned into a string of flashing lights, and I believe it was maybe Cheney coming up from the south, and he had 5 vehicles with him, I think is what the count was. And he drove by me there at the dump corner, and that's the first major relief that I saw that was going to be there to stay.
So you were up. You went to work on Monday, and you were up all night Monday night, and you were helping Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
You actually got on a fire truck on Tuesday. So did you go out of town in the country on Tuesday some?
Tuesday evening, We responded to a fire west of town, Pryor's place, and we worked our way up there. And that was the first time I was out of town and kind of got an idea of the scope of what we've been dealing with. Unfortunately, we got out there and George's truck broke down. And, you know, we've been really hard on our equipment. It's amazing that it lasted so long. And while we were out there waiting for a new belt to show up, got a chance to see what was going on. And from his place, looked south. And it was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. At one point, there were these smoke rings blowing horizontally across the horizon. The sun's starting to go down about this point. It's about 8:30. Wow.
So was there things on fire that you could see south of you, or was it mostly black?
Oh, the whole skyline was on fire. That night when I saw a relief come through, there was so much fire around town that you could drive without your lights on. And it was point to point on the compass, full circle.
And this is Tuesday night?
This would be Tuesday morning.
Morning.
When I saw our first relief show up. This Tuesday evening, the entire southern horizon was just nothing but flame. And even from as far away as we were, it was still tall on the horizon. It was a sight.
And what's the wind doing? How fast was it blowing on Tuesday?
At this point, Tuesday evening, it's back out of the west. And I think it's only going about 30 miles an hour. I say only 30 miles an hour because in contrast to what we've been dealing with, Thursday's no problem. Yeah.
So you mentioned some truck breakdown. Did you have a lot of trucks break down, or was there... were they easy to fix, or did you have to take them offline, or how did that work?
Some could be fixed. Got them fixed well enough to get back onto the line. Some we had to take offline. The ox that George was in was obviously offline until we got the belt, but once the belt was back on, it was back online. There were some other trucks which had frame damage. One had to be abandoned. We had another one that got kind of banged up trying to work a berm, and it knocked the pump loose, but we were able to get it fixed by Tuesday. Other than that, general damage to the vehicle, doors being broken, air filters ruined.
Did you have time to, like, do some maintenance on the trucks?
Yes. Yes, by Tuesday we were getting some time off the line where the vehicles which needed attention could get attention. By Wednesday we were able to do larger fixes.
So on Tuesday, were firefighters getting any attention? Were they able to go get meals or get some sleep?
See, Tuesday around then, I think maybe a little bit earlier than that, a whole bunch of people showed up and cooked food, and that was amazing. And then we started having sandwiches show up, and then it got to the point where people brought in enough snacks and ham and cheese sandwiches or whatnot, and that you could go over and grab a couple of granola bars and a sandwich with ketchup and mayonnaise and mustard, get a cold drink, and get back at it. And then I think it was by Tuesday evening we were starting to have chow halls open up around town. So that response was, I think, pretty rapid considering what was going on and where we were at.
What about Wednesday?
Wednesday. Went out on 52 again on Wednesday down to Snake Creek.
And who was with you on the truck?
Dilbert. He was driving, I was nozzle, and at that point, Ashland, what I understand, was being used as guides, where we'd take a task force or two, and, we need to go to Snake Creek. course, people from out of town's like, what are you talking about? It's like, okay, we know where we're going. So we take them down there. We had another truck out there and just put out grass fire, knock it down. At that point, the winds were starting to stabilize, as in they weren't shifting around as awkwardly. The wind was down, so at that point, it's just normal grass fire. And that's the first time I really got a chance to get out of town and into the black, and started seeing the damage that had been done to the livestock and the fences and houses.
How'd you kind of feel when you saw all that?
Oh, it was horrible. You know, I made the comment on the way back into town. It's like, I don't think I saw a single good fence out there, but it was the wildlife and the livestock. And
did you see a lot of dead that day? Or had they started picking them up? Or were they kind of...
Nobody was in pickup mode yet. I think it was still kind of figuring out what was going on. So it was all still pretty fresh.
Were you around anywhere where they were shooting cattle?
No. I didn't see any of that. But, I didn't see as much as a lot of people did. But what I saw was sad.
So were you out all day? When were you relieved of your duties as a firefighter during the fire?
See, we were all day again on Wednesday, and we were told to kind of take a break. Of course, you go home, you take a shower, put the radio on the charger, leave the radio on, and just lay there until you get called out again. So you're not really sleeping. Worked Wednesday, came back in again on Thursday, and we had enough help by Thursday that we were able to kind of do some stuff around the firehouse, get some bunk time, whatever people needed to do. You mentioned the store. I had a delivery on Wednesday. Some 1,000 pounds of potting soil that had been ordered a month and a half before, and they decided that's the best day to deliver it. Had a carpet truck show up, didn't know, didn't care. He's on his route. I don't know, but there, I'm unloading carpet, trying to keep the business going. At this point, my employees are back and they're running the place. Great employees. Said, "Well, do I need to come in?" It's like, no, don't come in. We don't want to see you. Something needs to be done. Call us. We'll get it done. Yeah.
So, did you talk to the truck drivers that brought these items in? Did they? What were their reactions to what they saw as they were bringing stuff in?
Stunned. Absolutely stunned. The carpet delivery, the guy driving that truck looked as confused as why he was there as I was wondering why he was there. Like, what's going on? Explained it as best I could at the time. And, ask him, where's your route take you? I was like, oh, we're going west. So, you be careful going west. There's a lot of damage out there. There's a fence line down. Animals are out. Just take your time getting through here, and it's like this all the way west, not just here. So, get on your radio, talk to your truckers, use your phone, whatever you need to do, get the information you need so you don't get trapped somewhere.
So they hadn't heard of this before?
No, they came into it blind.
And this is on Wednesday?
Yes. No, nobody had told them until we got into it. And Thursday was kind of a pickup and maintenance day. And it was Thursday evening that we were officially told, get off the line, you're done. Which it wasn't surprising that we went out again Friday morning. The wind had shifted again, this time out of the northeast-east. And it was howling pretty good, and they called us out, and we got to the fire station, headed out there. It was zero visibility, back roads, I can see why they call this out, because there are embers all over the place. And we got up there and we're trying to find the fire. The wind was really howling at this point. I don't know, 40, 50. Of course, it's just ash and moon dust at this point.
What's the temperature?
It was kind of chilly at that point. It was getting cold at night. That Monday night, Tuesday morning when they were coming in, I'd go and try to put foam into the containers and all that, and they were covered in ice. So that's what we were dealing with, was hot in the day, cold at night. Of course, that stresses the body out. But this thing on the early, early Friday morning, if it wasn't very, very late Thursday night, we had to. With zero visibility, people from out of town, they would have ended up in ditches. So I'm glad we called, but we were officially off the line Thursday, but not really until Friday.
So have you ever had any experiences with wildfires like this before? Or did your family ever talk about wildfires in their history?
No. No, they never talked about it. I've fought fire like this before where the wind was blowing that hard with that sort of fire load. In those conditions, low humidity, hot, especially for the time of year. I have fought in that, but the wind didn't shift around like it did on us that day. If it's blowing 50, 60 miles an hour, you can get ahead of it. It may be a long ways, but you can get ahead of it, do something, protect the houses. But the way the wind was shifting around, you think you got something stopped, and then it shows up somewhere else. It was wicked.
Is there anything you perceive that was positive that came out of this fire?
Unity. A lot of rallying around the people who had lost their houses. There were people without fire gear going out there and doing what they could to help their property, their neighbors. People were driving around cutting fence. I was driving to west of town, and there are cattle on the road, and because people are going cutting fence trying to get these cows out of the way. I think everybody understood the gravity of the situation. Like I said, there's the guy with the water tender trying to get into it. All he had was a t-shirt and a pickup truck with a trailer full of water, and he's wanting to go out in it. He's like, where do I go? The food at the firehouse, the burger feed, was amazing. Because I came back and all of a sudden here's the grill going. Like, wow, this is great. People dropping stuff off, doing whatever they could. And not just that initial, but throughout the whole week it was like that.
So what was your reaction to all the stuff that showed up, the food and like those tables that were there? I mean,
humbling. I go off and do something and come back and there's more. I go off and do something, come back and there's more. And every time I came back, there's more and more and more. There's never less. The support we got kept us on the line. I don't know if we could have fought that long without rest, without knowing that there are people back there who were rooting for us and keeping us going.
Made your adrenaline going?
It did for a while, and then you just kind of run out and just keep going.
So what about, were there some of the people or agencies that proved most helpful?
Tell you what, I'd have to give a hot tip to the Kansas Highway Patrol and their efforts. I talked to some people who were out around Eaglewood, and they were setting their own roads and getting rubberneckers and confuse people off the road so that they could operate as best they could. And those efforts probably did save structures because they were able to get their water tenders where they needed to go. Now, they had their problems. I understand that their main pump went out, so they had to go around town and out of town and get water and bring that back in. Getting those roads shut down so we could all operate without worrying about a car wreck, I think, is a point that's not really mentioned very much. At one point, somebody said kind of half-jokingly, it's like, if half of these highway patrolmen were firefighter vehicles, we'd have this thing under control. And it's, I think, you know, however you want to take that, but looking back on it, I think that's a testament to how much effort they were putting into it, because there were car wrecks. Driving conditions were awful. When the trucker got called in, the truck wreck and that over there, I was here in town, and I tried to respond to that. And I got about to the rest area east of town, and it's like, I can't drive through this. So them shutting down the roads kept more wrecks from happening, I think, and may have saved some lives.
What do you think about the communication between the people that were evacuating and the, I don't know, the law enforcement or whatever? Because I've heard stories from people that they drove through the fire. Do you have any comment on that? Because like you said, you couldn't go, and you've got fire training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of that going on, and a lot of it was by necessity. At one point, after one of these wind shifts, I drove west on the dump road because that's where the wind was blowing from, and got about a quarter mile west of the dump and heard a Vern Heskey on the radio. Was like, hey, you need to get down here because the dump's about to catch on fire. I just drove by there, and I didn't see anything because I'm out scouting. You know, I'm looking for this. So I know what I'm looking for. And just within that quarter mile, it got overran. I had to turn around, and I drove back through fire. And it's just one of those things where you look out the window and see the side of the road and try to stay on the road as best you can and maybe turn the music up so you're not thinking about it.
When you were listening to the fire chatter on Monday, did they mention the smoke or any problem with the smoke?
I can't think of anything specific. All I know is when I went to go pick my daughter up, it was so smoky here in town that it might as well have been a London fog. And that was early, and it got worse. It got much, much worse. And that was just here in town. Obviously, you're up in it. And when I saw them come back in, their eyes were just bloodshot. You know, the next round I had was Visine, saline, stuff like that, stuff to clear the eyes out. So it must have been just absolutely horrible.
What would you think that, have you made preparations or made some plans for what you would do next time to prepare as a family or what mm-hmm. you think the community should do?
Well, I do know there's a little bit of confusion in general. Social media is kind of tracking that as well. There are a lot of people like, you know, what do? Where do we go? What is the evacuation call? What, you know, what is that siren? If there's a siren, what's going on? So there was some confusion there, but I think people kind of work through it, probably through the social medias, trying to coordinate, you know, what do? Where do we go? What direction? All that. Me personally, yeah, there's some things I'd pack a little bit different. Like I'd have a deck of playing cards in our boogie bag. Like I said, it helped out the firehouse. It's something for the kids to do. I'd like to have a set of clothes or two packed away for them so I don't have to do that. But, you know, the kids, you know, I'd have to do that every 3 months.
Yeah. What about iris alerts? You think they were helpful, or did you hear any of them?
I don't remember seeing or hearing any of them. When they would have been sending out alerts that I would have caught, I was with the customers, and I generally don't have my phone and radio going while I'm talking to them. It's just to say it was an exception. My phone is, I kind of remember getting some, but I'm not sure if it influenced me much at all. But maybe it did for other people who weren't in that situation. Yeah, there was one gentleman who stopped by the firehouse about 8:30. He said he laid down for a nap and woke up. He's like, what happened here? And couldn't think of anywhere else to go but the firehouse. And him and I talked for a while, and So it didn't reach everybody, but it must have reached enough people that there's, I understand there's a pretty good sized crowd in Coldwater.
What kind of plans could the town make or the community? Something different? Some way to prepare?
Oh, gosh. You know, how do you prepare for that? I'd say a typical wildland emergency like that threatening town, you have some time to prepare for it. This was moving so fast that it was outside even of the games I played. When I mean games, I mean a tabletop situation at home was like, okay, if it's coming from this way, we need to go this way, this and that and other thing. But it was going so fast that that convoy from the hospital, it no sooner got to Buffalo, they had to go south to Woodward. And I understand that there was even talk of evacuating Woodward. I mean, this is a pretty major city with lots of personnel and equipment, and they're talking about evacuating there. And the wind shifted so badly. If it just come out of the west or just come out of the north, you can work with that, even if it's going fast. But when it keeps shifting around like that, you don't know where it's coming from. I'm not sure how to prepare for something like that again, except just have your basics and have a general plan. I don't know.
So when did you first hear there were two different fires that were coming together? Or how did you learn there were two fires?
I learned it was larger than what I thought it was when I had gone north on Tower Hill and started to see it coming over the cliffs. Everything I had heard of had been stuff from the west, coming out of Inglewood and from that direction, the dump. Everything had been coming out of that way. So when the wind shifted and I drove up north, it was like, well, I'm just kind of doing this because I need something to do. And I got up there and started seeing this fire sign. It's like, we have problems. So I got on the radio. I called in. I don't know if anyone heard me or not because everybody was so busy. But Ashton truck showed up pretty soon after that to try to tackle that, but it was too big. I didn't hear that it was multiple fires until much later. At that point, I didn't care. All I knew was a fire that was around us that we could see. It was probably more like Thursday or Friday where it was like, okay, this was a fire that Mineola was trying to deal with, and we couldn't get it because nobody was getting anything that day. We were at the mercy of the wind. But that's probably when I first heard that that was a separate thing that's joined up. And that they all joined up and ended up making, depending on who you talk to, 20-mile head fire, which is incomprehensible.
Is there anything you remember that struck you as funny after it was over, or that you heard that somebody did that you go, oh, wow, I didn't know that?
Well, we had our fireman's humor going throughout this whole thing. It's just one of the things that kind of keeps us going. I did get a chuckle one day. I think this was this would have been Wednesday afternoon. And I think the school was serving dinner that night. And you see, it set up an emergency kitchen and all that. And some of the firefighters had gone over there. And there were still some sandwiches left. And I was too tired to do anything. So I just sat there. Sitting there and I was watching this, just peeking out the barn door. And here's this guy sitting by our fire truck. And he's just sitting there talking to himself, it looks like. And what is this guy doing? And you kind of start peeking around. And I see it's a reporter. And he's got a camera set up. He's talking to the camera. And, there's three or four of us sitting here at the table. And, here's this guy. He drives all the way out here. It's still pretty dangerous out there even at this time. And, he makes it all the way out there from Wichita. And he does this report in front of the fire truck and just packs his stuff up and takes off. We're right there. And, why did you even come out here? What is this guy? And 10 minutes later, he comes back, grabs a sandwich from our dwindling supply, and just takes off. Doesn't talk to anyone. What was that? I'm looking around. Did anybody else see that? And we were kind of joking around about that. We probably gave David a little bit of grief because he pulled in one day and the reporter went up there and started interviewing him. We were kind of in the background chuckling. Yeah, they got you. But,
what did you think of the media coverage of the whole incident?
I'm not sure if I could give a great opinion on it, mostly because I was too busy doing things to sit there and watch television and find out how we're doing. It looked to me like they were more concerned about what was going on in Hutchinson, and with good reason, because they were having their problems. They're talking about evacuating Hutchinson. I guess they evacuated the prison. You know, they're having problems. Okay, and this maybe kind of cracked me up too, because my wife was watching television and doing an interview. This reporter was up in Hutchinson. And I guess she's doing a live broadcast or something. It's like, here we are in Hutchinson, the largest grass fire in Kansas history. And I guess somebody in the background stopped at their turn around and said, no, it's not. Big one's going on in Ashland right now. And he cut feed and came back and I guess it, I'm sorry, this here in Hutchinson is not the largest grass fire in Kansas history. We're receiving ash from this wildfire down in southwest Kansas, and went back up more on her story. But, you know, it was stuff like that, and the guy coming in and taking one of our sandwiches instead of going over to the chow hall. You know, he just seemed a little disinterested, considering the scope of what we were dealing with.
Did you get to talk to any of the strike team firefighters?
A few. Got to talk to a few. Great people. I can't imagine riding a fire truck the distance they did and jumping right into the fires like they did. They were amazing. Of course, everybody's kind of a specialist of one thing, and so, you know, you watch the forestry guys tackle open grass fire at Snake Creek, and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, you're holding a hose out the window. But then you see them get to work on a tree row, and you're like, holy, these guys are good. So I think as people were put into their specialty roles, we really started making some progress. And it was fun to watch how other people did it. And everybody was professional, they were courteous. I think they did pretty good. And considering how remote we are, I think they got here at a pretty decent time, too. So I saw that first relief Tuesday morning, and it wasn't long after that that I saw a Black Hawk fly over town. But I know help's coming. I know it's coming. We just got to hold out. And we started showing up, and it was such a relief.
What was some of the strike team's perspective of the fire? I mean, kind of, what was their perception of how you handled it, or what types of things they saw when they got here? Did they talk about that some?
Not so much with me. And when I talk to people, it's usually just, you know, hey, how you doing? Where you at? But they're all professionals. And especially ones coming out of Colorado. This is what they do. I'm sure we look a little bit loose and cowboyish to them. Like I said, the forestry guys were pulling the hoses out the windows. They went through this whole safety briefing. You know, this is where we're at. If you're in trouble, this is where you go. Very professional, as they should, because you're coming into a situation where they don't know the terrain, they don't know the roads. They have to do that. So it was always kind of interesting when we came flying by them in brush trucks, standing on the back, just spraying water. I'm sure there's a contrast there that if there's a picture, it wouldn't be funny. But like I said, at the same time, when they got into the trees, they were rocking it. We don't have equipment like that. So, and they probably looked at this the same way. It's like, what are you even doing out here if you don't have this equipment? So it's interesting to see how all these different departments with their vehicles, what they had brought, how they approached putting out this fire. everybody did it a little bit different. Everybody played up to their strengths and whatever their weaknesses were, mitigated those risks. It was a very, very well done job. I was impressed.
So what about the fire training that Ashland Fire's been doing? Did that have any effect on how this fire was fought?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you get tired like that, and that's when your training kicks in. If you don't train, if you're not well rehearsed, and you get tired, that's when people make mistakes. They put hoses on wrong, they slip off the truck, they forget to change the air filter, stuff like that. So training plus the experience, and there's a lot of experience on this fire department, those two things together covered 90% of the effort. All we had to do is stay awake and not do something silly. Training.
Okay, yeah, after the fire was over and everybody gone home, they brought in people to help the firemen kind of talk about what they had seen mm-hmm. or had done. Was that of any help to you?
I believe so.
Or how did that work?
What I really liked about that is everybody there had a different story. I'm telling my story. The people who were right up there in Englewood trying to save houses, they had stories. And everybody had perspective on how they saw the same events. And it was really nice to be able to get everybody together and kind of share that story outside of a potential fishing story kind of deal, or I just don't want to talk about it. There's a lot more that people wanted to talk about that I don't think they knew how to talk about. That's something brand new. That's what happened is so far outside of comfort zone that, we didn't know what to do. Like a kid learning how to walk or eat, we've never done this before, so how do we do this? And it was kind of nice having some people guide us through that and then hear some of the other stories that, even if I had the opportunity to ask, probably wouldn't ask. I don't want to point out names, but, there's some people did some really amazing stuff that I would never have known about if that powwow hadn't happened.
Did it help you deal with the situation better, or did it give you some relief from, knowing what had happened and change your perspective on the fire or the people that you fight fire with?
Yes and no. I've always respected the people I fight fire with here, not only here in Ashland, but Englewood, Mineola. We fought fire together for a long time. I've always trusted the people I fought fire with. But to hear some of the stuff that they went through while I'm doing my thing was amazing. I would never have known had we not had that counsel.
Do you think the mediators did a good job of making sure everybody got to tell their story? Or
they did, as best you could with a bunch of honored firefighters, especially coming right off of that. We're still trying to deal with it. No, it was good.
You think different things would come out now after, this amount of time to kind of have some perspective?
I think that depends on the individual and how much they felt like talking about it. What's gone down the memory hole or what has been tamped down into the memory hole. It's like the Snake Creek thing. I remember seeing all the dead animals, but, trying to put the close-ups and stuff off to the side. It all comes down to the individual and how they're feeling at this point. But I'm glad that did happen. That did kind of get everybody sort of on the same page and talking about things.
What's your biggest takeaway thing from this whole incident?
Um, I think the ag community has to be commended. Less than 24 hours, I saw hay trucks rolling through town. This is Tuesday, hay trucks. I mean, we don't even know if we've won yet or not, and hay is coming in. How they came together was absolutely amazing. They were receiving so much support that they were putting out calls for help to unload trucks. And there were a couple times I quit what I was doing and went down the feed and see and help unload trucks just because there was so much help coming that we were out of manpower. Vehicles are in use, vehicles are breaking down, forklifts, stuff like that. And I'd never seen anything like that before. And it was very humbling.
Did it make you feel differently about the community?
Oh, absolutely. The gathering there at the high school on Sunday was the most community-oriented thing that I've ever been around in my life. No grievances were put aside. It doesn't matter who, but I was helping out people that I thought I'd never talk to again, and there were people there who probably never want to talk to me again, and we're side by side just getting it done. You know, none of that mattered at that point. We're just trying to find out what we have left and how to help the people who lost things, and what do we do next? And that was always the question, what can we do next? You know, somebody finished up a job, he didn't go home. It's like, okay, now what? There was always one more thing to do, and there was always somebody there doing that, whether it was donations at the fairgrounds or feeding the firefighters who'd come in. I heard a lot of stories about how these firefighters who come in, you know, sometimes you go help somebody out, and they're lucky to get a tent, and you know, here they are with a cot, and hot food, and good food. And there's some that are like, well, we don't want to leave. We'll stay here as long as we can because, you know, this is amazing. You know, a lot of them said that they've never seen anything like that before, and I think that's a testament to the people of Clark County and Ashland.
What about all the volunteer help that came later? That, you know, came to fix fences and stuff like that.
Absolutely incredible. In fact, it's still going on. Just the other week, there were some volunteers from Pennsylvania, and they come into my store and just kind of walk around and see what's going on. And I got to meet a lot of people like that, where they just had a few, you know, a couple hours off. Of course, it's hot, and air conditioned, and they're just looking for something to do. And they just come in and walk around, and you know, if you felt like talking, we talked to them. If you just wanted some time by themselves, that's fine. But to see all that was, and it's still going on. No, that was always, you know, okay, this is a hot new topic. It's going to be gone in 2 weeks. And then 2 weeks went by, and then a month went by, and then 2 months went by. And it's still going on here we're in August now, but July is when I met these nice people from Pennsylvania. It's still going on. It was outside of what I thought was going to happen. I think that's just, it's incredible, absolutely incredible. You see so much negative, hear so much negative, that when something like that happens, it just makes you want to think all that negative is just a total lie. Because, you know, here's all this help, us out here in the middle of nowhere, not just us, but Oklahoma and Texas, and everybody who suffered through this thing was, it was just absolutely amazing. Somebody told me a story about a hay truck from North Dakota that still had snow packed in between the bales. I mean, that's just packing up and going. It's amazing.
Yep. So, do you have any other thoughts about this experience? Anything you'd like to include or things you thought you forgot?
Well, it's nice to be able to sleep again.
Well, what about your family? Did they come back?
They did. I was able to get a little bit of bunk time Tuesday morning. My wife kept calling me, and they were having just a horrible experience. They evacuated a cat. Our cat was old and sick, and it cried the whole time. The kids are bawling. My wife is calling me every 30 minutes saying, "We're coming home, we're coming home, we're coming home." It's like, "No, you're not, no, you're not, no, you're not." And I finally went over by the grain elevator and took a picture towards Coldwater East and sent her that picture. It's like, "This is what you're going to have to drive through if you come home right now, so don't." And she got that. It's like, "Oh, okay, well, we're coming home just as soon as the highway patrol lets us go through." And she even tried prodding them. It's like, "No, I got to go back. My husband's a firefighter. I need to be there to help him out." And I said, "You're not going." And that's something else I commend them for, because at that time, they did not need to be driving back through y'all. You know, even if you could, it's so smoky, it's so dark. You know, I might as well be driving thick fog, except it's not thick fog. It's something that can choke up your engine, and all of a sudden you have real problems. So I was able to get home, take a shower, get a little bit of bunk time, and she showed up about 30 minutes after I laid down and was just in tears. She saw what we were trying to fight against, and it was nothing but black from here to wherever, and you know, just miles and miles and miles of burn. And they drove through that, and she realized, like, you know, "Oh my God, he was right. You know, what was I even thinking trying to drive through this?" The scale, they had no idea. My daughter, you know, I made this comment during the powwow, is, you know, all they've known of the fire department is Easter egg hunts and parades, right? And you got to see what we, the other side of it, the work side of it. And maybe I should have spent a little bit more time saying goodbye to them when I sent them on the evacuation. I started feeling that when I heard that protection was in trouble and we were trapped in cold water. And, that's good. I still think it was the right call, but it's bloody awful.
So do your kids talk about the fire?
Sometimes. My son, he just knows that something crazy happened. My daughter, she's old enough. You know, when she came out of school, you know, I was there and she was running towards me and she's just in tears. And you know, she's running towards me and she's like, "Daddy, Daddy, I don't want you to die. I don't want you to die." I'm not going to die, honey. You know, let's get home. Let's get stuff packed and, you know, let's get you out of this danger area. And she's like, "If you're a firefighter, you're going into that. I don't want you to die." I said, "Honey, I got to go. People need my help. And I need you to get out of here because it's dangerous so I can help people." And I hope she understands that.
Does she have any friends in her classes that were affected by the fire?
Oh, yes. Yes. In fact, we did an interview, and there were a number of kids in her class who were directly affected. Yeah. And then everybody had a story. That was a pretty good thing. I wasn't so sure about it at the time, but I'm glad they did that. Not only, mostly for the kids. The questions they asked afterward were adult questions. Tried to give the best answer I could without being too adult.
So, anything else you'd like to add?
It was so intense, and I said that I thought the town was in balance until after Wednesday. That there for a couple weeks or so, I'd, you know, walk around my house and wonder, you know, where am I? You know, this all shouldn't be here. We were probably saved by just the winds dying down and help showing up in a timely manner. I'm not sure how we did it. I know we feel pretty bad about the people who lost their houses and You know, we haven't lost structures to a grass fire since I've been on the fire department. I know that really bothers some people. It bothered me. You know, we did what we could with what we had against a very, very upset dragon.
Do you think if you'd had more help at the beginning that it would have been any different?
No. No. No, I don't. Maybe save another house or two, but that's about it. If all the help that we had been here in Ashland when this kicked off, if we hadn't been there in 10 minutes to put that out, it would have happened anyways. And as it turns out, you know, if there's 2, 3, 4 fires, depending on, you know, who you're talking to, you'd have to stop all four of those simultaneously. Or eventually what happened, it may have taken longer. Maybe if we knocked out one of the 3 fires right off the bat, the other 2 still would have got us. It still would have been rough, even with all that help. It was so windy that even if air support was available, I don't think they could have put it online. And then when the wind finally died down enough that you could, it was dark. I'm not sure how comfortable they are dropping tons of water out in the middle of nowhere with no landmarkers in the middle of night. I guess they probably wouldn't do that.
I think so. Yeah.
So then, again, you're looking at a Tuesday afternoon before.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I was having a discussion. I guess Oklahoma's all queued up and ready to go, too, and they still have problems. So, I don't know. I think it's just one of those deals where there's so much going on in so many different places that it was going to happen. You know, if it wasn't an electric fence sparking off, it was going to be a glass bottle in the ditch with the hot sun and setting that off. And then, you know, it's a hard decision, but, you know, say all that equipment was already queued up and that was going on, you know, did he send it here? Did he send it to Hutchinson? Did he send it to Dodge? You know, and where are we on that totem pole? I don't know. I think it's just a rough day that was going to happen no matter what. And I think all the fire departments dealt with it as best we could with what we had, with the experience we have, and didn't lose. It's hard to... I want to say that we won, but, you know, it kills us that people lost their houses, lost their livestock. People had to go around and put their...
What kind of comments have you gotten from people that lost their houses or lost their cattle? Or?
I can't believe how positive they are. And I think a lot of that had to do with the amount of relief that came and how quickly it came, that they knew that they weren't just going to be left out in the breeze. It's like, hey, you know, people want us to recover from this, so we better step up. You know, they're bringing in hay from Michigan. They're bringing in hay from North Dakota. They're bringing in hay from Florida. You know, these people dropped everything on their own dime and loaded up trucks with their own equipment and their own hay. And we're heading this way within 24 hours, you know. How can we fail that? And I never once heard anything down or negative from the people who had lost things. I mean, other than, like, you know, this was awful. But there was no, I give up. I never saw, during this whole time period, I give up. Never saw it. And that's probably the best thing I could take away from this, is nobody's given up on this.
I think you're right. So, anything else?
Not at the moment. I think Ashland Fire Department rocked it.
Yeah. Thank you very much for your time.
With good help from Englewood and everybody else. It was definitely a team effort.
Yes.
But, wow, long week.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate you coming in and talking.
Yes, thank you.
Yep. Because you did stuff that I didn't.